Welcome to an Uvula audio presentation of Hamlet and Eggs, a soft-boiled detective story, written by James Campanella, narrated by the author. Story and performance copyright 2006. And now, Hamlet and Eggs, Part 1. Lucifer walked into my office at 9:10, as he'd done just about every day for the last month. He pranced about on my furniture and knocked over an ashtray. As usual, I kicked him in his little pink behind. Yelping, he ran out of my office and sped down the corridor. I threw the ashtray he'd knocked over after him. I took great pleasure in watching him flee my wrath. I hated the nasty little creature. On cue, Henri came pounding into my office moments later, dreadlocks flying. He angrily demanded,
"Hammond, what you done to Lucifer? He's hiding under my desk. He won't come on out."
I eyed Henri with a look that approximated affixing him to the wall with a meat cleaver. "Henri, I don't want to see that thing in my office again."
"But Myron," he cried indignantly, "Lucifer likes you. You ain't gonna keep him away 'cause you don't like him, are you?"
"Yes, I am," I gritted at my associate. "Jews and pigs get along badly enough when the pig is on a dinner plate. You can't expect us to do any better when the pig is knocking over our ashtrays and doing..." I sniffed the air hesitantly and groaned. "Oh, doing unspeakable things on our floors." Henri lifted the chair beside the door.
"Oh, I see what you mean, mon.
Keep him out of here." One of Henri's problems is he's got a stubborn streak a mile wide. He will not give up on an argument, even when it's obvious there's no way he can win it. He will continue to hold his point until either he or his opponent is blue in the face.
"Can't you just close your door, Myron?"
he asked in a voice that challenged me to continue the dispute. I didn't want to argue. I never want to continue an argument with Henri, but something about his tone of voice always goads me into responding. Henri's retinue just has that effect on me, and he knows it. I can't ignore a challenge from him. "I don't want to close my door. This is my detective agency, and I want to know who's walking the halls. The door stays open. Why can't you leave that stupid pet porker at home?"
"How could you ask that, Myron? You know Susie hates Lucifer. She'd just as likely take a knife to him as not, if I ain't around."
"With good reason," I mumbled under my breath. Henri's wife, Swoozy, had the patience of a saint. I was surprised she hadn't taken a knife to her husband yet. Aloud, I said, "If you have to bring him here, why don't you keep him locked in your office? Why do you have to let him wander the halls?"
"You can't expect me to lock up Lucifer. He's got closet phobia."
"That's claustrophobia," I corrected. I was obviously not getting through his skull. A bit more emphatically, I said, "I don't care if he's afraid of dust bunnies. Keep him out of the halls. How does it look to have a detective agency where pigs are freely roaming the halls?"
"He's only one pig, mon, and it's better than keeping him locked up."
"Not from where I sit," I said, eyeing the mess under the chair.
"But Myron, you must have a bit of charity in your heart, mon."
"I reserve my charity for humans, not pigs."
"Pigs is nothing but little pink people with curly tails."
"Be serious, Henri."
"I am serious. Pigs is most as smart as people, smarter at times."
"Where did you hear that?"
"I read it somewhere."
"Where?" I demanded. My partner looked surprised at my vehemence.
"Don't get riled, mon, I don't remember."
"Uh-huh."
"What does that mean?"
"You always seem to conveniently forget where you've read something whenever I want to know the source."
"Are you saying you don't believe me, Myron?"
"No, Henri, I can easily believe that that pig of yours is at least as smart as you are." Henri, being totally immune to sarcasm, said effusively,
"Why, thank you, Myron. I didn't think you cared."
"Yeah," I replied, a bit miffed.
"So if Lucifer is as smart as me, does that mean I can let him wander the halls?"
I stared at Henri in disbelief. He was being amazingly stubborn on this one. I always found it hard to believe that someone who showed such dexterous brain activity in detective work could be so bloody dim the rest of the time. I found it hard to believe it was anything but an act put on for his own advantage and amusement. Well, I wouldn't be taken in by them this time. "No," I said.
"But he's such a pee-wee pig, and..."
"No."
"And he don't make messes very often, and..."
"No."
"And he's so well behaved with clients, and..."
"No!" He looked at me between narrowed eyes and asked,
Do I take this to mean you want me to keep Lucifer locked in me office?
Yeah, man, you got my meaning, I smiled.
You're a cold man, Myron Abramowitz. Anyone ever tell you that?
Yes, my mother.
Obviously a wise woman.
I grinned a bit maliciously. She kicked me out of the house, didn't she? How could she have been anything but wise?
Aye, how indeed, man.
Henri had cleaned up my office, and he and his pig were long gone, when Melange, my secretary, called me over the intercom.
Mr. Abramowitz?
Yes, Melange, what is it?
The Anders and sisters are here to see you,
she said with a note of humor in her voice that I couldn't ignore. Knowing that the Anderson sisters, whomever they might be, couldn't hear me, I asked, "What's so funny, Melange? Do the ladies have two heads or something?" Melange has a dark, warped sense of humor. The more horrible the rest of the population might think something, the more her bizarre sense of humor will find something exceedingly funny about it. I remember when there was a terrible earthquake in Mexico City. We all watched it on TV, horrified at the number of dead and crushed bodies. In the middle of one grisly scene, where a half-constructed building had collapsed on a group of construction workers, Melange broke out into raucous laughter. When I finally got enough of my disgust under control to ask her what the hell she found so funny, she told me it was the ironic sight of a construction worker, still wearing a yellow hard hat and crushed beneath a steel beam, under a sign that read, "For safety, always wear your hard hat on the construction site." Still laughing, she had said,
"That hat didn't do him much good, did it?"
Melange was twisted. Melange's answer to my question came almost before I was finished asking. She obviously had been ready with a reply. Her voice came back a bit on the deadpan side.
"No, Mr. Abramowitz, nothing like that. I'm sure you're going to have a ton of fun."
"What did that mean?" I wondered. With Melange, it may have meant anything. "Send them in," I finally said, worry setting in. I checked my calendar and found no notation for an appointment with the Anderson sisters. They must have been walk-ins, I amused. What did Melange find so damn funny? I don't seem to have any normal associates working for me. They're all weird in one way or another. Henri Retinue and his pet pig, Melange and a twisted brain, Nazareth Pike, whom I still had not yet seen that day, thank God, and his obsession with seafood. Weird. I should have thought twice before I opened my agency in Augusta, Georgia. Georgia. What does a good New York Jew have in common with the good old boys of Georgia? Nothing. And that's the problem most of the time. My family has been living in New York for 5 generations, and I was a 4th-generation cop. I'm about as much a New Yorker as you can find anywhere in the universe, so you might well ask me why I dragged my family down to the land of cotton. Whenever some redneck asks me that, I usually glare at the questioner and say, "Because we're Jews, and we're used to suffering." That usually puts them off balance long enough for me to escape. To tell you the truth, the real reason that we're down here is far from mysterious. It was simple. 9/11 forever made a target of my hometown. I lost too many friends that day to forces neither I nor my brethren in blue could ever hope to control. Those 2 giant holes in the ground began to haunt my sleep for months. After maybe the 4th time waking up panting and covered in sweat at 3 in the morning, Mary Elizabeth, my wife, and a clinical psychologist, decided that I probably had post-traumatic stress syndrome. I didn't argue with her. I began to dread going outdoors, feeling physically ill in anticipation. No matter where I went in the city, that empty space in the skyline was like a continual souvenir of the hellish past. The horror never really left me. After a few months of that, I decided I couldn't take it anymore. It came to me that no one ever aims at the edge of a dartboard, always at the center. Maybe it was time to take the family, leave the center, and go elsewhere. Mary Elizabeth went along with it, saying she could restart her head shrinker practice anywhere. But she wanted to move to Florida. I hated the idea of Florida. It's too hot, too sandy, too filled with bugs, and too filled with my old Jewish relatives who would be constantly harking at me because I married a Catholic woman. I wanted to move to Virginia because it's near Washington, D.C., the perfect place to be if you're a private investigator. Liz hated the idea of Virginia because she thinks it's a state filled with tobacco, congressmen, tourists, and lovers. After weeks of argument, we finally compromised on somewhere in between. Georgia. I wasn't exactly enthralled with the idea at first, but I finally figured, why not? You could do worse. Besides, spouses cheat on each other everywhere, and all I really needed to begin my business were a few disgruntled husbands or wives. I stared out my window at the muddy yellow Savannah River.
My offices are on the 10th floor of the Addison Building on Broad Street in downtown Augusta, right down the street from a huge Confederate monument, which seems to me like putting up a shrine to the Boston Red Sox to celebrate all their World Series wins. In short, silly. I like my office. I chose it specially because of its central location and maritime view to the northeast. I desired anything that gave me even a vaguely New York atmosphere. In the Bronx, I'd spent a good portion of my life staring out of the East River, so it was nice to have the scenery that reminded me of home. I was still entranced with the view when Melange ushered the Anderson sisters into my office. My secretary was making no attempt to mask the malicious smirk on her face. Melange's brown countenance was excessively made up. She wore heavy purple eyeshadow, thick black eyeliner, and blood-red lipstick. The red leather mini-dress she was crammed into matched the scarlet of her lips. I wondered passingly whether she wasn't secretly part of some blood cult that performed animal sacrifices. Perhaps they'd knock off a pig if given the right incentive. Someday I'd have to ask her what the going prices for pig-napping and swinocide were. I turned my attention from Melange to the Anderson sisters and immediately realized what had triggered her horrible humor. Geez, but these broads were huge. I'm not talking overweight or even obese. I'm talking huge. I've got an Aunt Myra who's been trying to lose weight for the last 40 years. My Uncle Saul threatens to divorce her every 5 years or so if she doesn't get rid of her extra tonnage. She weighs over 300 pounds. Well, the Anderson sisters dwarfed my aunt. Even made her look petite. I must admit, a bit embarrassed, that I was so stunned by their appearance that I didn't say anything at first. I didn't even introduce myself. I just sort of stared at them stupidly. The sisters rushed into my office like a couple of derailed freight trains. The first thing that struck me was that they must have had the combined weight at least equal to my wife's Toyota. Anderson's sister one was dressed in a yellow and purple floral print dress that draped over her immense frame like a pup tent. Her dun-colored hair was piled on her head in an immense, though orderly, tangle. She huffed and puffed so hard I thought she was going to keel over from a coronary right in my office. Anderson's sister two was right behind her. She could have been a clone of Sister One, except that she obviously preferred black and green fish print muumuus to the flowery tent dresses. "Oh, thank God," said Anderson's Sister One, in a voice like a female avalanche. "You have to help us, Mr. Abramowitz. We desperately need a detective. Both Emma and I will both go mad if we do not get the succor that we need." I said. She continued unimpeded by my words of wisdom. "We first went to Marcus Allen's detective agency a few blocks south of here on Green Street. We explained our problem to him, but he recommended the Abramowitz agency. He told us you were a big city detective from New York, that you would never turn down two sisters in trouble. He said you'd help us because you had such a great heart. He told us that you'd have the case solved in the blink of an eye. Anyway, after that glowing recommendation, we rushed right over here as fast as we could. Oh, please don't abandon us in our hour of—" "Whoa," I said, finally finding my breath. "But we—" started Sister Number One again. I again halted her breathless tumble of words. "Please, Mrs. Anderson, please, let's do this in an orderly fashion." "Before I lose my lunch," I amended mentally. I could tell this was not going to be one of those client meetings where everything goes along smoothly. "Thank you, Ms. Dubois," I directed weakly at Melange. "You can leave now." "Yes, sir," she almost tittered. I threw her a dark scowl as she shut the door. I suddenly felt like Daniel, locked in with the lions. I took a deep breath, got a notebook and a pen, dubiously indicating two suspiciously frail-looking chairs, and said the fatal words. "What seems to be the problem, ladies?" I heard the unmistakable groan of tortured metal as they squeezed themselves into my chairs and winced inwardly. Like an unstuck steam valve, Sister One belched forth once again with a rush of words.
"I'm Hattie Anderson, and this is my sister Emma. You must help us, Mr. Abramowitz. You really must. You really, really must. We are in the most dire straits imaginable."
I refrained from the smart-ass remarks that could have come too easily from my lips and simply repeated, "What's the problem?" Hattie, who obviously did the talking for the two, Emma had yet to say a word, waved her hands in the air and said dramatically,
"Her father's been kidnapped!"
I sighed inwardly. Well, okay, that sounded like a straightforward case. I'd been worried there for a moment that this could get incredibly weird. Are you sure he's been kidnapped? I asked. Of course, replied Hattie indignantly. Her sister nodded like a Teddy Ruxpin with a broken spring. You got a ransom note, then?
Well, no.
The man's over the phone?
No.
Have you gotten demands of any kind? I asked, getting a bit frustrated now.
Not really.
I sighed aloud for dramatic purposes.
Well, then how do you know it's kidnapping?
Hattie looked confused for a moment, and Emma leaned over and whispered something in her ear.
Oh, that's right, yelped Hattie.
She turned back to me and said triumphantly,
because there was violence involved.
Uh-huh, I replied, not very impressed. Have you talked to the police about this? Hesitantly, Hattie nodded her head. Her blue-green eyes, surrounded by mounds of fat, looked worried. Abruptly, I knew that the case had become complicated again. All right. What did the police say?
They, said they wouldn't look into it because it was too silly. They were sure that Daddy just wandered off the ranch by himself.
Wandered off the ranch? Now, why would the cops say that, I wondered. Was your dad ill, I asked? Did he have Alzheimer's or something?
No, not really.
What does not really mean?
He's kind of dead.
What? I exploded.
That makes no sense. Sure it does, if you just let me explain, she insisted, accompanied by the automatic mechanical nodding of Emma.
Please do, I said. This would no doubt be a good one. Cold New York winters looked pretty inviting at times like these. It didn't take too much imagination to know why Marcus Allen sent the two crazy broads over to me. I groaned inwardly, and I thought Melange was cruel. Hattie smiled, obviously pleased I would listen to her absurdities past a certain point.
Our father Winston Anderson, died last year of a heart attack. He...
Whoa, wait, I ordered. The name was patently familiar. Winston Anderson of Rural Choice Chicken? The best-selling chicken in the South? Are you talking about THE Winston Anderson?
Yes.
I stared at Hattie a bit goggle-eyed. Somebody's kidnapped a body more than a year old? I demanded this incredulously. It's not like he was Elvis or something.
No, no, let me continue.
Of course. Good God, weirder and weirder.
Nobody has stolen our father's body. You see, when Daddy was alive, he was a bit of a strange bird.
Emma tittered at this. Hattie turned red for some reason I couldn't comprehend. Go on.
He believed in reincarnation.
Oh, no. Why did I suddenly see what was coming?
Uh-huh.
He really believed when he died, he'd come back as a chicken. You see, he believed the chickens were the most noble of all beasts. He really liked chickens.
Uh-huh, I said weakly.
He had such a strong belief in being reincarnated as a chicken that before he died, he had a special clause put in his will.
Hattie pulled out a piece of legal-looking paper. I waved it away. I was in no state to read it at the moment. I was having enough trouble keeping a straight face.
I'll read it to you, said Hattie, uncrumpling the will. To my dear daughters, who certainly deserve everything I own, I leave the properties of the chicken ranch, the Rural Choice Chicken Processing Plant, and the surrounding properties. There is only one condition I place upon dear little Hattie and Emma. They know about my strong belief in reincarnation, and I know they will respect it. I am making my intentions clear now, so they will be prepared when I return. After I die, I will make every attempt to come back as the first chicken born on my ranch.
I gritted my teeth against the laughter burbling up.
I charge my daughters with taking care of me, that is, as a chicken, after my death. As a chicken, I expect the finest of care. I want my feathers kept clean, a nice comfortable roost, and only the highest quality feed. I
couldn't hold it anymore. I burst out with an eruption of laughter. It wasn't kind. It wasn't professional. It wasn't even very nice, but I couldn't help it. Winston Anderson had to have been the biggest loon I'd ever had the pleasure of hearing about. Hattie and Emma stared at me as if I'd just burst out laughing in the middle of their father's funeral. They eyed me coldly, for the first time looking anything but friendly. Even if I thought all this was thoroughly silly, they were taking it quite seriously.
Geez, that must have made them as peculiar as their dad.
May I continue?
Asked Hattie a bit huffily. Coughing a bit to bring myself under control, I mumbled.
Sorry, Miss Anderson. Go on. Ham. I expect I will live to be a ripe old chicken. I put myself in my daughter's competent hands. I know they will take good care of me. If such is not the case, that is, if my chicken self should die prematurely of abuse or neglect, all the holdings which I have bequeathed to Hattie and Emma will revert to my wife, Cornelia. Do you see our problem now, Mr. Abramowitz?
Not really, I said, holding back a smile.
Our father, that is, the chicken who says he's our father.
Hattie stopped, realizing what she'd said.
I mean, the chicken our father said would be him has been kidnapped, probably harmed in some way. We need you to ferret out the truth, or we will lose our inheritance. Please, Mr. Abramowitz, you are only hope.
Emma added her usual nods. I suddenly felt like Alec Guinness in Star Wars. Please, Obi-Wan, you're our only hope. Yuck. Actually, I'd been told that I looked like a young, balding Alec Guinness. I rather like that comparison, but I'd rather believe that he looks like an older, hairier version of me. I sighed. Weird as it sounded, it was a pretty unambiguous kind of case. It was just... it bothered me. I didn't like it. The entire thought of looking for a chicken napper, it just didn't appeal to me. I couldn't take it seriously. I sighed and started rationalizing. I've always believed that God has set aside a special hell just for Jewish private detectives who rationalize. But that's never really stopped me. First of all, I was sure that whatever happened to Winston the Chicken, the Anderson girls would not be held responsible. What court in the land would uphold last wishes like Winston Anderson's? Sound mind didn't seem to apply in this case. Second of all, I doubted the chicken had been kidnapped. The cops were right. It had probably just wandered off. I had no doubt that it was either in some animal shelter by now or a lovely fricassee. I started to tell Hattie and Emma Anderson how sorry I was I couldn't take the case and how I was sure it would all turn out for the best when, yes, it happened. My conscience stepped in. I looked into their sad, forlorn, chubby faces and remembered just why I'd become a private investigator. The easy money. I sighed. How could I turn down opportunities like this? These girls were rich. The case was half solved. There would be no physical danger to worry about. Why the hell not do it?
It would be nice to lessen the suffering of the world for a change.
That included my own. Elizabeth had been chiding me for the last month about getting our kids, Samantha and Aaron, into a private school up on the north side of the city. Maybe there would be enough of a windfall from the Anderson sisters to do just that. All right, ladies, I said, feeling magnanimous. My agency will take the case. We'll find your father.
Wonderful!
Gushed Hattie, leaping to her feet. I was fearful for a moment she'd try to hug me or something, but she only leapt up and clapped her hands.
How much will this...
I tut-tuttered her to silence. Don't worry about it. We'll discuss remuneration and expenses later. I'm sure we'll come to an equitable understanding.
Wonderful,
repeated Hattie. Emma silently nodded agreement. I have a few more questions for you about the kidnapping and the chicken, though.
Please,
said Hattie eagerly.
Ask anything.
I nodded. So, where was this chicken, your father, living?
In our house on the chicken ranch.
And when did he disappear?
1 week ago, Wednesday night. Emma and I were out catering a party. I'm a gourmet cook, and Emma helps me. It's our hobby. We were out all evening until 11 o'clock or so. When we got back to the house, Daddy was nowhere to be found.
Uh-huh. You said there was violence, that you suspected your father had come to harm? Why?
Our living room was torn apart, like someone had come in, fought, knocked over all the furniture.
Emma whispered in addition to Hattie.
And Emma says that the TV station was switched from Channel 8 to Channel 50. Daddy would have never allowed that. He would never have missed American Idol. That's his favorite show.
Uh-huh. Do you have any suspects, I asked, desperately hoping they didn't. I didn't want complications here.
Well...
Emma leaned over and whispered to Hattie.
Oh, yes, our Uncle Rufus.
Uncle Rufus?
Yeah, he was Daddy's brother. They never got along very well, but he works as the plant manager at the Royal Choice Processing Facility. Daddy always tried to treat him fairly.
What would he have to gain by kidnapping the chicken?
Oh, he married Mama after Daddy died. If Daddy were to come to harm, he'd get everything that we own through her. Mama wouldn't know the first thing about the chicken business. She'd let him take care of everything.
Why did this suddenly feel as if my name was Horatio? I dropped my pencil and looked up from my notepad. Between Hattie and Emma, there was enough for 6 Hamlets. I guess that was fair, after all. Hamlet did outweigh Horatio in literary importance. Oh, boy, I sighed to myself. There are certainly more things in Augusta I'd ever dreamed of in my philosophy. I think I smelled foul play here somewhere.
I decided to start working on the Anderson sisters' case that afternoon. Things were a bit slow around the office, as they always seemed to get when fall arrived. It was a time of year when summer passions were cooling down and the wet winter doldrums had yet to set in. I went looking for Henri in his office and found him to be absent. I questioned Melange on his whereabouts. She told me with an evil grin he'd left 20 minutes before to take his pig to the vet. That meant I was taking care of the case myself. I usually like to have someone else around in case I get into trouble or need another point of view, but I probably didn't need anyone along on this silly case. I ran into Nazareth Pike on the way down to my car. I tried to duck into the elevator before he saw me. The god has been exceedingly cruel to me lately. Nazareth was able to jam the elevator doors with his foot before they fully were closed.
"Gosh," he said with a smile. "I'm sure lucky to have run into you. Melange told me you were going to be gone the rest of the afternoon."
"Hello, Naz. What's the problem?"
"Well,
Naz hesitated like a small boy, embarrassed about having to ask where the bathroom is. That's an amusing image if you realize that Nazareth Pike is about as far from being a small boy as you can get. "Spit it out, Naz. I've got work to do." He said, his face going through several shades of red in his discomfiture. "You may remember that I told you that Henri Retinue acts stupid, but is in reality quite intelligent. Well, Nazareth Pike is stupid, and acts like he is. I suppose it comes from his years as a linebacker with the San Diego Chargers. He got bopped in the head just a few too many times on the gridiron. He's my muscle, and damn good muscle he is. Things can get tight sometimes in the detective business, and sometimes you could use someone who scares the hell out of people just by being around. I do not scare anybody. I'm semi-bald, 5'7", and have a pot belly which I've cultivated to elegant proportions through years of care. Naz is my special scary somebody. Naz is a big guy. That is a purposeful use of understatement. Let me rephrase. Naz is much more than a big guy. He's the Mount Everest of big guys. He's the Grand Canyon and Sears Tower of big guys rolled into one. Yes, he's a real big guy. Nazareth Pike stands somewhere over 6.5 feet tall. I don't know precisely how tall he is, but I figure after 6'7", it doesn't really matter anymore how tall a guy is. He has a head of tousled hair that's about the same shade as Ronald McDonald's and looks about as natural. He weighs as much as my Aunt Myra, but there isn't an ounce of fat on the man. His arm muscles look like coiled pythons, and his leg muscles seem as if he's had an intravenous drip of steroids going through him since the day he was born. He's like a moving hillside, and if you didn't know his true nature, you would be scared utterly spitless. But if you do know Naz, you're not scared. However, you still try to avoid him as much as humanly possible. Naz, you see, though a Georgian redneck at heart, has a problem. He spent too many years out in California. His airheaded girlfriend out there dragged him to one too many Greenpeace rallies, and he began to like it. He became an environmental activist, and then it went to his head. He became obsessed with the environment. Now all he does is corner you and demand that you listen to his rhetoric about how the latest oil drilling off the coast of Louisiana is going to endanger all the catfish, dogfish, triggerfish, lungfish, marlin, clownfish, pigfish, etc. You can put in your own favorite fish. Chances are Naz has crusaded for it. Though I dreaded whatever this might lead to, I gently asked one more time, "What the hell is the problem?"
"I'd like to come along with you on this case," he said lamely.
Suspiciously, I asked, "Why? What do you know about this case?"
Melange told me that..."
"Damn her," I cried. "Does that woman have to listen in on every conference I have?"
"No,
Mr. Abramowitz?
I don't think so.
That was a rhetorical question, Naz. I didn't expect an answer.
Oh.
I again pushed the elevator button for the first floor, but the doors stayed open. Naz was leaning against them, holding them open. Get off the doors, I growled.
Sorry,
he muttered, entering the elevator. I tried to move around them, but the doors slammed shut before I could make good my escape. I ground my teeth quietly.
Mr. Abramowitz, you still haven't told me if I can go with you.
I looked up into his bark-brown eyes, which seemed miles away. Why do you want to come along? I demanded. Obviously taken aback by my angry tone, he mumbled something I couldn't catch. What was that? Quietly, but audibly, I heard him say,
I said I wanted to see the rural choice processing facilities.
Why in God's name do you want to do that? I realized with horror as his eyes lit that I had asked the wrong question, the question he'd just been waiting for me to ask.
I'm glad you asked me that, Mr. Abramowitz,
he said, face brightening.
You see, my animal rights group, Animals Are People Too, has been trying for weeks to get that plant inspected by our organization, but we've been put off at every turn. It's been rumored that they do ungodly and inhuman things to chickens before they're slaughtered. They drug the poor birdies to keep them quiet in their cages. Besides that, we've heard that their methods of slaughter are cruel and unusual. We want to find out for sure. If I come along with you, then...
You want to do surreptitious investigation on the side? Is that right? The elevator doors opened and I stepped into the parking garage. Naz followed me.
Why, yes, that's exactly right. I knew you'd understand, boss. You always did strike me as someone with a big...
No. Nazareth stopped in mid-sentence.
Huh? Sorry, I don't think I caught that.
No, you're not coming along with me, especially if you want to investigate atrocities in the chicken industry.
But...
No, I said firmly.
But how will we know whether...
No, Naz, I said as I unlocked my car door. If there's anything atrocious going on, I'll be sure to tell you when I get back. I stepped into my car and slammed the door behind me.
But you don't know what we consider deplorable. You...
I lost the end of what he said in the roar of the engine as I started my 10-year-old Acura. I began backing out of my parking spot. Noticing how despondent Nazareth looked standing there in the dim parking garage, I rolled down the window and said, Don't worry, Naz. If I see any chickens screaming and calling out for their mommies, I'll be sure to tell you when I get back. See you later.